but I would welcome a few questions.
You said inflation is somewhat lower at the recent meeting, but it seems kind of abrupt for me, this change to inflation not being less than desired. Core CPI has been 0.9 year over year since April. The PCE deflator core is 1.4, which is kind of in the middle of 1 to 2%. Am I missing something? It seems very abrupt, the change to inflation is not meeting our expectations.
So I don't know if everybody heard the question, but so the question was tied to inflation is lower, but it's been lower for a little while, so why the attention to that now? I think there's been plenty of attention to it actually over the last couple of years. We do have a little mandate. There's no doubt that we're focused on inflation. We have highlighted in the long run that we're expecting it to get close to 2%. I'm not sure it's that different from what historically we've been worried about. I think it got a little more attention in the statement because we've now had quite a few months where where the inflation rate is well below, certainly by the core CPI, and even by the core PCE. Yeah, it's 1.4, but if the goal's 2, that's a pretty big miss. And particularly if your forecast would indicate that it's not likely to turn around anytime soon, if you start wondering how long do you want to have something well below your target and what should you do to try to get back on path if what you want to get is back to your 2% target. Yeah.
Thanks. Two questions. As a leveraged investor, would it concern you, what is the Fed think of the fact that most leveraged investors now can get credit on easier terms than crisis? About the same, maybe a little worse for some, but for others easier. And on a related note, another round of QE begins, and you get an even greater supply of potential credit for investors. And if a carry trade took hold in the U.S. and became macroeconomically significant, similar to Japan, would that concern, do you think that should be something the Federal Reserve would be concerned about?
So it all kind of gets tied to the asset bubbles, and are we worried that we're...
But I wanted to give it something concrete.
So it is something we would be worried about. If leveraged investors were dramatically expanding their balance sheet and causing the price of a wide variety of financial assets that affect the real economy to go up in a very rapid, unsustainable pace, that would be a concern.
But only the U.S.
economy. I would say that our focus is on the domestic economy. Our mandate is on the domestic economy. And so when I look around at, am I seeing evidence of widespread and rapid increase in asset prices that are occurring from leveraged investors that are able to rapidly expand their balance sheet? That's not what I'm seeing. In fact, I think both households and businesses are continuing to shrink and deleverage their balance sheets. That's part of the issue for why we're not seeing more consumption and investment.
But they're not when I mean leveraged investors, I mean hedge funds.
So there are many leveraged investors that we should be concerned about. Hedge funds are one component of what we should be worried about. But in terms of where I'm really concerned about for leverage, it's people that are more debt leveraged rather than equity leverage. So it's not that if hedge funds become large enough to greatly influence the prices of assets that I care about, that is something that we should be concerned about. But I'm not seeing evidence when I look at a wide variety of prices that that's actually occurring. And in fact, that's one reason why the core CPI and the core PCE has been trending down, not trending up. Yeah.
You mentioned several ways that expanding the balance sheet could help the economy. When Japan did that in the early 2000s and we did it in 2009, the stock market rose significantly in both countries. Do you think that was a coincidence, or is that another channel in which quantitative easing would work?
So Japan has done a lot of quantitative easing. Obviously, it hasn't been as effective as I think they would have hoped. I think there are a variety of channels. It's difficult to measure. If we're being truly successful, then one aspect of quantitative easing is it should make people more confident that certainly nominal GDP will grow more quickly. And what the distribution is between nominal and real may be a little bit difficult to determine, but you should expect that nominal GDP would improve. And that should be consistent with seeing over time improvement in stock prices. So ideally, if the program's working, we'll see it in a variety of different ways. One of the ways is in the soft market, but it would also be in kind of, is real GDP growing at or above potential, like we'd like to see? Are we seeing improvement in labor markets? So it wouldn't be a focus on the financial sector. I think the real success is coming back to our mandate. Are we seeing an improvement? Is there an impact on the real economy that's noticeable? That's ideally what we should be focused on. The stock market may be one of the many channels that that may influence.
Okay, at the August 10th meeting, the Fed, the FOMC decided that it would hold constant its securities portfolio at what the Federal Reserve Bank of New York that same day said was $2.054 trillion. I saw that as an innovation in monetary policy of establishing a balance sheet analog to an interest rate target. Is that a view that is endorsed by anyone else at the FOMC, by anyone at the FOMC, you, or is there consideration of having a kind of formal balance sheet target as a means of communicating your objectives, both in an easing and tightening?
So I won't comment for anybody else but myself. But had we not done what we did, the result would have been that we had fairly rapid prepayment from the mortgage-backed securities portfolio we had, and we were not reinvesting those proceeds. So the implication of that's an implicit tightening. So having an implicit tightening at a time where both elements of the mandate are moving in the wrong direction would seem like a puzzling result. So I think it's actually more fundamental that if I'm focused on our mandate and we have an implicit tightening at a time we don't want to do that, then we should take actions to avoid an implicit.
Do you think it makes sense, though, to have some part of the balance sheet become a specific policy target going forward, a target for the size of the securities portfolio or the overall balance sheet as a specific, specified target like you do for the state of the country?
I think it's going to be more situational, and we're going to have to be looking at what the circumstances are, both with our forecast, what the incoming data is, and determine how effective and which areas of the market, if we should be active in, we should get active in. So I think it's going to be more situational and dependent on the outlook and incoming data and where we are likely to have the biggest impact. So in terms of getting an easy-to-read policy rule, I think that we're probably not at that place right now.
There were two strands to your argument, President Rosenblum, that I wanted to ask about. One was the way you began, kind of structural issues, the implication being if there's structural issues, the Fed can't really do anything about them. And you talked about labor allocation. But there's other structural issues, some of which you pointed out yourself, that deleveraging is in some sense a structural issue too. What do you say about that, and what will buying securities do about that? That's the first question. The second question is, similarly with rates, you know, you pointed out that there's one example where rates are lower, and it's a very sick economy with deflation. Clearly, we don't want to get there that way. What evidence is there that buying more securities would get us there in a healthy way?
Okay. So, a couple things. I mean, I think in all of our models, lower interest rates end up in a stronger economy. So that all things equal, if you said you were going to raise interest rates by 100 basis points, either at the short or the long end, my guess is your model would say the economy would be weaker than if you lowered it by 100 basis points. So I think it's embedded in most of our forecasting models that actually moving of interest rates will have an effect. I think there's some standard ways that you would expect it to have an effect, and I think there's some broader ways that in the current environment it might have an effect. So I don't think it's so unusual to be trying to affect interest rates. Am I missing the point?
No. My only comment there would be, just as you said, you know, at corner solutions implicitly, we have to question everything. One might even need to question what you just said about rates. Is it desirable, and what will happen?
So there are two parts to that. Can we affect interest rates? And if we're willing to expand our balance sheet, I have no doubt we can move interest rates. It's a question of how much you want to expand it, but for the mortgage-backed security program, we bought a large percentage of the new issued over the course of the year or so that we were doing that program. If you're willing to buy up most of the new securities, it's going to have an impact on the interest rate, and just depending on how you want to scale it, I think you can have a big impact on interest rates if you choose to do that. The second question about how big an impact, and gets at kind of the first part of your question. So let me give an analogy. If I have a son or daughter that have strep throat, and they get sick, I know that if I give them antibiotics, after they take 10 days of the antibiotics, they're probably going to be better. But I'll also suggest to them to drink lots of liquids, get plenty of sleep, and do other things, and they might get better a little bit quicker and might feel better much quicker. Monetary policy is not going to prevent the fact that there are problems in the economy, and I highlighted in my own talk that there are structural issues, so I agree with you. We can dramatically impact some of those structural issues, but we can mitigate some of the impact. And so it doesn't solve the problem. This isn't something that monetary policy alone should solve. And in fact, you could easily argue that fiscal policy will be a more potent tool than monetary policy when we're at the zero bound. So we have to take into account what fiscal policy is likely to do into account as we think about what the appropriate monetary policy is. And I do agree that ideally we would see more of it coming from fiscal stimulus than monetary stimulus. But nonetheless, I do think that monetary policy can play a significant role in mitigating some of the problems. It doesn't solve the problems, but helps mitigate some of those side effects that we should be worried about.
I can't help but just say that giving antibiotics was such a good example because antibiotics, after all, we have all these resistant antibiotics out there.
The September statement laid out what it would appear to be a movement toward an inflation targeting framework as a way of governing policy going forward. I mean, as noted, inflation is below mandate, desire to bring inflation back to mandate. Presumably, the outlook for inflation will be very important in determining whether and how much one might get into a further LSAT program. Is that a fair assessment? And maybe a little of a detail here. In forecasting inflation, there's sort of this ever-present wrestling between the output gap and inflation expectations. In particular, on the inflation expectation side, how do you personally assess what's going on there? What weight do you put on the various measures of inflation expectations? I mean, I think in sort of determining what the prospects are.
So we had a little discussion about inflation expectations at our table. I think that's an area that is a rich research area because the ability of monetary policy to influence inflation expectations and how expectations are formed, I think, is a difficult question that I don't think economists have a full handle on. So just to go back to the conversation that we had at the table, if you look at expectations formation, for example, in Japan, they've been bound roughly at 1% despite the fact that inflation outcomes have been much lower than that, and those expectations don't seem to have changed very much. You could argue the same thing in the United States, that inflation expectations have remained relatively stable for a very long period of time, despite some periods where it was higher and some periods that it's slower. Now, there are very good aspects to that in terms of having well-anchored expectations. I would say that we've seen some movement down of what looks like inflation expectations measured in a variety of ways. So what do I look at? I try to look at virtually everything. So I look at surveys, I look at forecasts, I look at what we're seeing from financial markets where we can divine out of it what's happening with inflation. And it seems like certainly that trend is not up. If anything, that trend's down by virtually all three of those measures. So that is something that we have to be attentive to. But I would say it's not new that we've been worried about inflation. We've always been worried about both inflation and unemployment. We take our mandate quite seriously, and we worry about both those. And during a period where you're missing on both, then that is a call to try to do something more. So this will be the last question, and then I can talk informally to a couple people.
Thank you. I guess I would like to just ask about this idea of missing on inflation. It's my understanding it was an informal inflation target. When the Fed was talking about inflation, it talked about 2% ceiling. which is what the Bank of England has, which is what the ECB had talked about. And so I'm just really puzzled why, if you've got a 2% ceiling and you've got obviously a lower bound of zero, why 1% all of a sudden is below your mandate. And when I read this statement, I looked at all the different inflation measures, and I looked at the core, and I looked at the PCE core, and I took the housing measure out of the core, and I looked at that, and I tracked these different measures. I went back, and I was just stunned by reading this measure, this statement about inflation being so low. And on your whole talk today, you talk about inflation like we're all supposed to accept that inflation is low. Inflation is in the middle of its target. Expectations are for the next 2 years that inflation is going to go up, at least the last published forecast that we had from the FOMC that they made public. And so this discussion about being having a problem with the inflation target just takes me by surprise. You know, and I worked at the Fed for 5 years at the beginning of my career, so I've been on the inside. I've been a Fed watcher. When I left the Fed, I left to do that, forecasted money supply and did this stuff. I've been looking at these statements. And I just say, I looked at that, and it was like somebody hit me in the stomach. I was completely and totally aghast at it. And so I would just like to ask, what is it that you're looking at? Why should we just believe all of a sudden that inflation is so far below mandate? What has happened that does that, when in fact I think that a critical analytical look at the things that Fed had been saying, that the framework that it had posed, would lead none of us to even be able to understand that, let alone accept it.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, I got hit in the stomach.
You
feel better having
got
that off your chest.
You missed the announcement of 2% inflation target. That's what you missed.
So the question that we're actually asked is, where do we expect inflation to be in the long run? And the answer that most FOMC members provide is 2%. And that is by PCE, core PCE measure. So the core PCE, as you just said, is 1.4%. 1.4 is below 2. If I instead want to look at a core CPI, 0.9 is below 2. So if I expect in the longer run that I'm going to end up about at 2, then I think by a variety of measures, we're below that. So I think that it is quite reasonable for us to highlight that as the inflation rate gets further below 2 and closer to 0, that deflation risks go up. But actually, at this time, as I mentioned in the talk, disinflation is undesirable. So with a lot of slack in the economy and an inflation rate going down with a fixed short-term nominal interest rate, that implies a tightening. So actually, in an economy where we have substantial underutilized resources, that's an environment where you don't want to have disinflation. And in fact, arguably, it would be positive to have a little bit more inflation to get us back up to 2%, which is our long-run target. So we're missing on both sides. I think it's clear that we're well above full employment. And you may disagree, but by the measures that I look at, most measures of inflation are below 2% where we expect to be. And certainly the measures that we've highlighted are certainly below 2%. And most of our forecasts would say that we're not going to get there all that quickly. So I think it is consistent with what we say, and it's consistent with what we've been doing. But that may be a matter of disagreement. So thank you very much.